Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Poetry allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of this show, recognize that they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. We're coming to you from the website allpoetry.com, and we are in the group Late Night Poets. You don't have to be a part of the group to be a part of the show, but it's more fun if you are. You can follow along in the chat where we talk about things, and you get to read along with us as we read the poetry. So check out Late Night Poets on I was going to say Blog Talk Radio, which is how you're listening, but allpoetry.com. And with me, I have my co-host, Babbler. How are you tonight, Babbler?
Hello. I'm doing all right. kind of crashing a little bit. I've not gotten a lot of sleep lately, but it's starting to catch up to me, and I'm really warm. I'm feeling very groggy. It's hot here today.
I feel that. I'm very, very grateful for air conditioning because it's really hot here as well. The wildfire smoke is still absolutely crazy here. There's like these warnings from the government. It's like, you are at hazardous level. Do not go outside. So it's like it's a little bit crazy. Like my throat is just burning from the smoke in the air.
No.
Fun.
That doesn't sound pleasant.
Pam, how are you tonight?
Well, so far, so good. This week, it looks like I'll be able to join you with reading and commenting because so far, knock on wood, fingers crossed, the boy is asleep. So,
yay!
Yes. And I, all in all, doing pretty good. How are you doing? Well, I suppose, like you said, you can't, your throat hurts because of smoke.
Smoke. Yeah. Can't see across the street sometimes. Definitely can't see the mountains anymore. But.
Oh, wow. Crazy stuff.
Yep. It happens every summer, but it seems worse this year. Maybe we block it out. Like we pretend. It's sort of like women in childbirth, where it's like you don't remember exactly how bad it is because then you wouldn't do it again. So.
Right. Exactly.
Or so I've heard. I've never actually given birth. But yes, it's just like I'm always convinced, like, this summer I'm going to be able to breathe, but no.
Yeah. That's like snowstorms in Wisconsin. Winter in general, like we always convince ourselves that it'll be a milder winter than usual, and then like the first snowstorm hits and we go into panic buying mode. It's like
with us it's the heat wave. Like you cannot get an air conditioner or an air filter or anything that right now. It's impossible. I have some friends who install air conditioners and they're like, we're booked for the next, like, 5 months, and we're completely out of stock because everyone waited until it was, like, insanely hot. And then they're like, okay, let's all buy an air conditioner now.
Oh, my goodness. Yep, it's crazy.
That's the worst way to get an AC.
So, Babbler, why don't you tell us about your contest?
Yeah, so this week's contest was done on Nietzsche, and I provided a bunch of different quotes that, you know, a little more artsy than I think what most people would expect to read from Nietzsche. You know, I thought he's kind of a controversial philosopher. There are definitely some things that he was a proponent of that, you know, maybe not so well received, but... You know, I thought that would be fitting for a part sinner, part saint kind of show because not everyone's perfect, and there are certain things that were good about his philosophies and good about his ways of thinking, and then things that people wouldn't like so much. But it's not so much about that as it is looking at the quotes and just feeling inspired and see what people come up with, kind of riffing off some of the things that he had written. So that... is the theme of the contest tonight, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what everyone has written and going through some of these pieces.
Me too. So I'm going to try to go in order of the prompts as much as where people labeled it. There are quite a few people who didn't label which prompts, so I'll put all of those together at the end rather than try to determine myself which prompt they used. So the one who wrote to prompt one is My Angel 3, and the prompt for that is, without music, life would be a mistake. So here we go. Why don't you read that one, Babbler?
Sure. So this is their story, is that correct? My Angel 3. As his eyes watched the beauty before him, full of poise and grace, his ears were filled with the majestic sounds her lovely hands made. Each stroke of the keys, a melody played, unfolding a story, the story of them, of their life, of their love. And even though the song would end, she would replay it again and again, every time feeling his heart with love that no amount of time would ever replace. Well, that was a really sweet piece. I mean, it's, you know, kind of bittersweet because it talks a little bit about loss. But it ties so nicely into music as well. You know, the majestic sounds of her lovely hands made, you know, on a piano. You can almost hear it. It almost puts you, like, into that place and that mindset. Where sometimes, I don't know, you hear something and you sit and you think more deeply than you do at other times about just a moment and just taking in the moment and where it is and knowing that, you know, nothing lasts forever, even if you want it to, because not even we last forever. And just kind of enjoying being for a moment. And I think that captures this really well, you know, just the love of a moment and a place in time listening to someone play on the piano. I think it's a really beautiful and sentimental brevity, and I think it fits the prompt very well and does a wonderful job of conveying emotion. What did you think, Pam?
I really like this. It is a beautifully written brevity, and I like the fact that it seems to be about an older couple who have spent a lifetime together. You know, from the title alone, their story, and then the unfolding of the story of them, of their life, of their love, and even though the song would end, she would replay it again and again, every time filling his heart with love. You know, I just, you almost picture this elderly gentleman and this elderly woman, and she's sitting at the piano and playing, and there's this, such a sense of connection and familiarity, and it really just, to me, speaks volumes on how music connects people and how the power that it has to kind of be a part of our emotions and express our emotions. I think it's beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. You can almost picture just the woman aging even, you know, like playing the same piano song just as the years go by. I think you're right. It is kind of a more mature couple. A wonderful comment, Pam. What do you think, Faziana?
I think you're both right that this is beautiful. And I can picture the woman aging as it goes. Like, I can just, I've zoomed in on her hands in my mind, and you can see that the hands age, but the song stays the same and that she still has very graceful movement of her hands. I think this is really beautiful. I like the stanza, and even though the song would end, she would replay it again and again, because there are those, you know, those good moments that do end, and maybe there are ups and downs, and maybe even relationships might seem like they're ending, but she's going to replay it, and songs are so connected to memory. So even if they lost each other, she would replay that memory in her mind over and over again by playing that song. It's very heartfelt, and I want to hear the song that she's playing. I think this is very compelling.
Yeah, indeed. It's very romantic. I love how emotional it is. It's very effective emotionally. So, wonderful write. Where are we off to next?
I'm trying to do the one by Eric Svensson, but my computer is being extremely slow. It's just protesting. Come on. You can do it, computer. My computer is aging, apparently. Here we go. It's starting to load now. Okay. So this is the prompt 3. And prompt 3 is, and those who were seen dancing were thought to be insane by those who could not hear the music. Whew. Who Said Your Bread Can't Be Buttered Both Sides? By Eric Svensson. Hail, noble Apollonian headspace, structured orb, ever-conscious, responsibility never shirked, classical ballet-trained, precise, pertinent, steps follow rules, severity of shape, form, and norm. Hail, Dionysian heart space, ribald, rockish, revelry ricochets, instinctual hip-hop dance energizes, subconscious wishes gestalt immediate release. Emotional force explodes in fiery freestyle dance. Improvisation flies, no time for indecision. Head or heart tails, flip the coin, trick or treat, shall the twain ever meet? Skilled high wire artist extracts gasps. Will even keel balance be maintained? Enviable sunshine, Apollo of music's dance, penchant for truth and prophecy, miraculous healer of disease, dubious Dionysus, smug shot shines, rap sheet ticks wine, women and song, insanity, ritual madness and religious ecstasy, duality days dance, puzzle, muzzles intent, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, adore the day, but shan't lambast the night. Prefer warmth, but snow angels, get my mojo going. Who said your bread can't be buttered both sides? Zebra pedestrian crossing, zigzag hopscotch, xylophone, tortoise, heart, invite, sassy hair, head. Mutual agreement, marimba, music ignites peace accords. End poem.
Wonderful read, Ephesiana. What an interesting poem. I really enjoy how it's like a concept of opposites, but also everything, you know, the good and the bad, the upbeat and the not, you know, and just enjoying everything with, you know, a real focus and nod on music. I really enjoyed. I loved that last line, the mutual agreement marimba music ignites peace accords, because the word accords makes you think of chords, C-H, because there's so many references to music. And so that does an interesting thing in my mind where I hear, you know, hear a sound there, just like a twang with like multiple notes. And even though it's like a peace agreement, you know, like a peace, you know, kind of, I don't know, it implies like getting along through music, which I find really intriguing. I also really liked adore the day but shan't lambast the night, you know, like, love the day but you can love the night too, like you don't have to hate one or the other. There's nothing saying you can't do and, which is, you know, heavily implied in that title there, that who said your bread can't be buttered both sides. You can enjoy everything. You don't have to dislike anything, which I thought was a really kind of a fun message here, you know. The focus of teetering and risk-taking, well, you know, the skilled high-wire artist extracts gas, even kills it to be made. Just, you know, risking playing it safe is an interesting concept in here for duality. So I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a wonderful concept because so many times when you hear about opposites, you get the either or scenario. So I loved that this is a take on and. So thank you for the write. What did you think, Ephesiana?
I think it was a bit of a tongue twister. I felt myself slip a couple of times. It had quite the vocabulary. And then the alliteration of ribald, raucous, revelry, ricochet. It was a tongue twister, but in a fun way. I really liked the line, prefer warmth, but snow angels get my mojo going. There's, again, that contrast. But something about that line really touched me. It's like, you know, you like to be warm and cozy, but something about, you know, laying in the snow, it's exhilarating. I really liked that concept. And I think that is seen all throughout this, where You know, there's the one thing, and then but there's enthusiasm for the other side too, and it's almost like a surprise enthusiasm every single time. And I like the reference to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is very enthusiastic. It feels very upbeat and positive the whole time, which, again, I think is pretty interesting considering its opposite. I don't feel like that's a commonly seen take. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really liked this. First of all, I found the picture he attached to the poem fascinating. You just imagine doing tightrope walking tricks in a dress that long. And, like Faziana mentioned how it's very uplifting. I mean, even the title is really positive. Who said your bread can't be buttered both sides? Because I think anyone who's willing to butter their bread both sides has a really strong conviction that they're not going to drop their bread. I would not trust myself. And, but it is. It's positive. It's uplifting. I like what you said, Babbler, about how it doesn't say, here's both sides, now choose one. It says, celebrates both sides. I mean, even those first two stanzas, hail, noble Apollyon, headspace, hail, Dionysian heart space. There's a hail, a praise for each one. Flip the coin, trick or treat, shall the twain ever meet, skilled high, where wires extract gas tonight. And, definitely some tongue-twisting language, but on a technical level, some wonderful alliteration. It's a beautiful and really clever references. I like puzzle muzzled intent. I did like the reference to Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I also liked the zebra pedestrian crossing. I thought that was really clever. I can't remember which show it was. I think it was House because it was a doctor show. And it was it said, when you think of a diagnosis, think horses, not zebras. And so that line there kind of made me think of that quote. But it's just really fun, really clever, and interesting all the way through, and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, no, there were a lot of really cool and interesting references in here that I thought were fascinating, that you could really dig into. So that's an excellent point, Pam. Yeah, I think this is a really clever, upbeat, and interesting write. Thank you for the comments. Where are we off to next?
I believe we have an audio from Cannibal Utopia.
Yep, here we go.
Don't listen to me, a Cannibal Utopia. Nietzsche, through Nostradamic insight, knew his life quoteworthy, could see down the generations as importance. But damn if the universe didn't screw him and he was born a midget. This wasn't supposed to be. No one quotes a little man. And a little woman? Does she even exist? It won't be long till dwarf is a slander too. This is the human condition, to pulverize. I am human. I am pulverized. Pulverizer. And we are each dancing to songs that we alone hear. Except another German laughed us wrong when exclaiming, spooky. Forgive me, I'm rabbit chasing. The image is this. 8 billion maniacs stomping, twirling, and swaying appear disparate through 8 billion minus one lenses. But patterns are evident if one were to parse rhythm. So it is, on hidden strings, the human heart is strummed by things to man's eyes hidden. That last bit sounded important. Maybe when I'm dead, I'll get quoted.
Excellent SoundCloud, and thank you, Cannibal Utopia, for the entry. Much appreciated. I really enjoyed this piece. There was something very rhythmic about it. It had a really interesting flow, and I enjoyed the line cutoff being kind of mid-sentence. It gives it this disjointed feeling to it while reading it along and listening. gosh, I'm drawing a blank on who it makes me think of, but I enjoyed that. I also really liked the line, "It won't be long till dwarf is a slander too," because this is a concept that I've kind of toyed around with in my mind. I can't tell you for how long, that, you know, while I wish it weren't true and while I wish it weren't the case, I feel like there's always going to be something that's some kind of derogatory term, because people just focus so harshly on the negative sometimes that you can try and make a term that makes it, you know, that retitles something, that reclaims something, that makes it more positive, and for a time and for an era, that's the acceptable term, and then it can get twisted into something. So I thought that was interesting because I felt like kind of connected to that thought that I kind of store in the back of my brain as well, and it kind of touches on some Nietzschean philosophies, you know, like Übermensch and that kind of thing. So I thought that was really interesting. I also really liked the line that was in here about the image is this, 8 billion maniacs stomping, twirling and swaying appear disparate through 8 billion minus one lenses. The idea of minus one, like you can't see yourself, you know, like you don't have any kind of perspective on yourself is kind of interesting. You know, it kind of makes me want to argue with it in a way, but I love it as a concept because I like things that get my brain going and thinking. You know, the idea that everyone is looking at how other people live their lives and making some kind of judgment or having some kind of thought about it, you know, ignoring the fact that they're, you know, it's a human being in there. So I love that. And then, of course, that last couplet that's, you know, like, hey, I think I said something good. Like, maybe it'll be memorable. So I thought that was interesting as well. So I thought this was a great piece. It was fun. It was a bit tongue-in-cheek. I liked the jilted rhythm that went with it. So thank you for the write. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one, too. It's very unique. I like that he mentions Nostradamic insight. Nietzsche, through Nostradamic insight, knew his life quote-worthy, could see down the generations. There is that kind of tongue-in-cheek. But it also makes you think seriously about everything we say, everything we do. Can you imagine, like, thousands of years from now, Pam Ray, Aphasiana, and Babbler all getting quoted because they dug up our all poetry files. You know, who knows how famous
you never know. We could be famous in our afterlife.
There you go. And I like the humor of another German laughed this long when exclaiming, "Spooky, forgive me, I'm rabbit chasing." First of all, I think of Elmer Fudd. But then I also think of how rabbits were used to test for pregnancy, you know, and also just folklore in general that mentions rabbits or, you know, I don't know. There's all that kinds of different things that can pop into your head at that with reading that line. I also like, Babbler, how you mentioned, and this is so true, that there will be for like a generation or so where a word will be acceptable. And then for some reason, people will find it not acceptable, and we'll try to find a replacement. Like, you know, and that whole question, that whole idea, you know, what will happen when, you know, words that describe a person's genetic condition, you know, become not acceptable? You know, how far will we take that? And just really an intriguing and thought-provoking write, and very well done.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that is exactly my thought, too, on that is, you know, what word is next? Just because it gets kind of, I don't know who decides that it's not acceptable or, you know, I assume the person it's aimed at, but sometimes it feels like there's other people who just choose to get upset on other people's behalf, which is interesting as well. But, yeah, that's its own kind of tenuous can of worms there, which, you know, I guess expected for a Nietzsche topic. And what did you think of Feziana?
I liked it. I thought it had a quirky sense of humor to it while still talking about, deep subject matter. I liked the question, and a little woman, does she even exist? Talking about how the man might be dismissed because of his size or strength, maybe. But then the woman, if she shares that issue of being small, she might be set aside. And I think that it speaks to sexism, but it does it in kind of like Pam said, tongue-in-cheek kind of way. So it's bringing up the serious subject, but it's doing it in an accessible kind of fun way. The part that you quoted, Babbler, the 8 million maniacs stomping, twirling, and swaying appear disparate through 8 billion minus one lenses, but patterns are evident. That's so cool. Thinking about how everyone seems like they're going their own way, but there are connections between people. And to describe it as the hidden strings of the human heart strummed, it's a really beautiful way of putting it. And then it kind of breaks the fourth wall there at the end. I said something important. And I like that. It kind of, like, grounds it again because it gets, like, you know, really deep, and then it brings it back into that kind of self-depreciating humor. And I thought that it was very well done and balanced.
Yeah, agreed. I enjoyed this piece immensely. Kind of makes me want to go grab a drink and sit down with Cannibal Utopia and pick his brain for a bit. I feel like we'd have stuff to talk about. So where are we off to next?
Now we have one by Versus Goliath, and he used both prompt 4 and 5. So prompt 4 is, there is always some madness in love, but there is also always some reason in madness. And prompt 5 is, you must have chaos within you to give birth to a dancing star. So Pam, would you read this one for us?
I would be happy to. And this is Tidal Dalliance by Versus Goliath, and it goes like this. Particles bounce randomly inside a core we call you, particle ounces of sodium, phosphide, being through articulating nonsense per diem, applied scalding H2O, largest organ scarred, collagen crosslinks hardens, charged by eons, humidity rain again, moss stink garden, who let this timid mud stain flush stinking barred in? If you built a moment for useless words momentous, give me truce, love, and trust. Glorify below, above them and us, lively fruits of passion's rust. Suckle sweet teat of beauty, buckle knee, pleased serenity, huckleberry, carry seed, honesty, knuckle deep in humble pie, majesty, in chaotic root of grand blossom, like despotic rulers, forgot where from. I read exotic quotation, went something like this. Optic cruelty spots not awesome. Fading fury of a fire deep within. Cadence hurries, tired bones grin. Traded purity for our sleeping sins. Dance deliriously in drowsy spins. Pulsar partner brings echoed energy. Your star innards sing corded effigies. Interspersed explosion, yellow and green. Colors disperse in oceans and verdant seas. Waves lap quietly at shores. With you, I'm never bored. End poem.
Great reading, Pam. I really enjoyed this. Just from a language perspective, I found it very fascinating. You know, I imagine somebody watching the ocean and comparing it in so many ways to disparate things, from, you know, astronomy to neurons firing, you know, and they use some pretty technical language in here as well, you know, particles bouncing randomly inside a core we call you, particular ounces of sodium phosphide beam through articulating nonsense per diem, you know, just balls of energy, you know, firing neurons just kind of shooting around, and it seems almost at random, and yet it's not at random. And it makes you wonder just how many things are interconnected that don't appear to be interconnected, you know. And then there's boiling water that causes, you know, raised scars, you know, and there's aging and all of these different things that just go on throughout life, like ups and downs and chaos and, you know, and yet are all connected. Which brings it back to, like, that first point, you know, where things seem random, that maybe aren't as random as they seem, and just how it keeps life fascinating and interesting and all the different things that happen. I really particularly liked the stanza, fading fury of a fire deep within, cadence hurries, tires, lungs, grin, traded purity for our sleeping sins, dance deliriously in drowsy spins, you know. To me, aging and maturing, you know, trading innocence and awe for experience and memories and, you know, the excitement, the hurried cadence of youth that turns into tired lungs. But there's this joy to it, you know, of the delirious dance that turns into drowsy spins. It almost feels like getting drunk on life in a way. Which I thought was really beautiful. And then the ending, you know, with you I'm never bored. And the fact that the you is ambiguous, I don't really take it so much as a you as a person, as it just is like being in love with life, being in love with existence, being in love with a moment watching waves. I really thought this was interesting. It was almost like an ode to life and chance and interconnectedness of seemingly unconnected things. So I found it really like exuberant and just like an exaltation of being, which I enjoyed. So I thought this was a lovely write. What did you think of Asiana?
I loved it. I think Versus did a great job here. His use of scientific language and concepts worked really well. There's a part, buckled knee, please serenity, and then shortly after that says, knuckle deep in humble pie, majesty. I don't know, I really love the way that he's using expressions like that use body parts metaphorically or like that make you think about other things, but the way that he uses them kind of show something really cool, like in the contrast between humble pie and majesty really work out nicely there. That whole section is amazing, really the whole thing. I really like the way that he has it spaced as well, because it looks like waves to me, the way that the lines sorry, the smoke is getting through my brain. The way that they're lined up, it's like little steps, and then in each stanza is its own crest in the waves. It's beautiful.
Great observation on the shape. That's a good point. It's fascinating, and I love how there's almost like a. It eddies out at the end, almost like a lap at the shore. That's a wonderful observation. What did you think, Pam?
Well, first of all, I think if Versus is going to continue to write these $10 stanzas, he needs to go back to making recordings. but it's funny because there was a show I was on the other night, and I don't remember which one it was, but we were talking about how Versus uses scientific type language and does it in such a kind of an elegant and beautiful way. And I like that you brought up the form of Faziana, how it looks like waves, because it does. And I like that Valor brought up that it seems to be almost about a celebration of life, and not just life, but of love. And particularly, it really seems to be, to me, a celebration of one person and all that they mean to in somebody's life. I did particularly like it, this most smile-inducing line. I think lines were, suckle sweet tea to beauty, buckle knee, please serenity, huckleberry, carry seed, honesty, knuckle deep in humble pie, majesty. I like the whole idea of that line, knuckle deep in humble pie, majesty, in that we become, when we humble ourselves, we become our most majestic. I thought that was an intriguing thought. I also like Pulsar Partner bring echoed energy, your star energy, corded effigies. There's such there feels like this kind of almost like this sense of balance between two people. And I really like that. It's beautifully written and very well done.
A wonderful take, Pam. Yeah, maybe, you know, it is about another person. I didn't take it that way on the first reading, but now that you're pointing out some things, you know, I can definitely see that perspective. So thank you for that. Where are we off to next?
Babler, can you read the one by Daniel Deschino?
Sure. This is The Dance of Change by Daniel Deschino. Change defines the day, as change defines the man, as change defines the days of man long forgotten. Yet I defy the permanent nature of change by changing yet again. What is different from one moment to the next, but everything? What is the same throughout the millenniums, but everything? And deep inside, beyond what I can see or grasp, every cell within my body has but one purpose, to resist the change of the ages. A game impossible to win, for if I grasp of my own flesh, what I hold was not in years past, yet it is still me. And what I think today is so much different than what I thought, yet it is still me. I am the change that I resist. I am the thoughts I did not know. Through change's wrath do I persist to fight and die, or submit and grow. End poem. I enjoyed this piece. This one was written to the seventh prompt, which was, sometimes people don't want to hear the truth because they don't want their illusions destroyed. And kind of talking about how as you grow and develop as a person, your perspectives on the world change. You know, the way that you see things changes. You think you understand things so well when you're younger. There's this weird confidence that comes with being a teenager where you think you've got it all figured out. And the older you get, the more you realize, no, I don't have this figured out. Like, yeah, I have some pieces of my life together, but you change and grow and you shift. And from one second to the next, you're not the same person that you were before. You know, so if your goal is to remain the same, if your goal is to fight the change, you know, you're going to lose that, even just second to second and moment to moment, because it's just a constant shift. So I enjoyed this piece and just the idea of, you know, how people evolve from one moment to the next. I also enjoyed the nod to, like, everything changes and yet nothing changes, because changing is itself permanent. And if you step back and you look at it on a really grand scale, you know, the stanza is, what is different from one moment to the next, but everything? What is the same throughout the millenniums, but everything? You know, it's very cyclical sometimes. Things repeat themselves, you know, and the fact that there is perpetual and constant change means everything's in a permanent state of flux, which means nothing has really changed. So, you know, it's this weird oxymoronic kind of situation, you know, if you look at it at a distance, which I thought was an intriguing point as well, because it goes from, like, the really minutiae, like, personality and perspective changes, and even, like, the cellular aging of a person, but then also steps back and looks at it on a much grander scale of, like, how things, you know, don't change at all and interconnect on a much larger scale. So I thought this was really interesting, you know, just fighting the desire to stay the same, and at the same time knowing that that's a losing battle, I thought was a really intriguing topic. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I like this. It's a wonderful exploration of self. What is different from one moment to the next, but everything? What is the same to the millenniums, but everything? And deep inside, beyond what I can see or grasp, every cell within my body has but one purpose, to resist the change of the ages. And that's a really just wonderful, thought-provoking line. And I like the whole idea of that, you know, oh, this stands here. And what I think today is so much different than what I thought, yet it is still me. The whole idea that, you know, physically, emotionally, and mentally, we go through changes, you know, natural changes that happen with the body as we age, and also those changes of that happen from experience. And yet, ultimately, we're still the same person. So the you know, maybe we're just a better version of that person because we've grown. I think this is just really a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
Yeah, excellent point, Pam. You know, and you're kind of ruminating on, oh gosh, had a thought and it just went ahead and flew right out of my head mid-sentence. Geez, I literally don't remember what I was going to say. Well, if I think of it, I'll bring it back up, I guess, if it seems timely. what did you think of Faziana?
I loved this. I really enjoy Daniel's writing. I liked his the way he said, yet I defy the permanent nature of change. And there is something really special about change being permanent, that it like you said, it's an oxymoron. And I really love that he points that out throughout this whole thing, that change is permanent because there's always change. Is such a tricky concept, and he plays with it really nicely, in an intelligent but at the same time very playful way. He explores this concept, and like the point that Pam was pointing out, I really like when he's grasping his own flesh, and it's not what he was before, but it's still him, and you can still be yourself, even though gradually each cell gets replaced, each part of your personality evolves. I think this is really an introspective and philosophical piece that's appropriate for our theme, and very, very well done. It was fun to read, and I love that when a poem can be both thought-provoking and fun, because sometimes it can be very dense to get through the very thoughtful, intelligent pieces, and sometimes the fun ones are a little bit fluffy, but this is both, and that's impressive to be able to pull off that balance.
Yeah, that gets to the point that I was thinking, oh, yay! I was thinking about this philosophical concept of, you know, when are you no longer you? You know, if everything changes and everything's different, then at what point are you no longer yourself? You know, if someone's to lop off, like, your arm and replace it with a different arm, are you still you? Well, I think most people would say yes. But, you know, how much are you lopping off and changing out before you're not you? You know, that gets at some deeper philosophical questions about, you know, monism versus dualism and all that, but which we won't delve into. But, you know, it does kind of poke lightly at some larger philosophical topics, which I think is very appropriate for this evening's contest. And so I did enjoy the brush on that. I think it was well done. So thank you guys. Some wonderful comments. Where are we going to now?
I'm going to read one by Diane D. She did just add a SoundCloud, but she did it, like, as we were starting the show, so unfortunately I didn't get to upload that. Sorry, Diane. But I do appreciate you making it. So if you want to hear it in her voice, you can listen to it from her SoundCloud. Problem with the World Today by Diane D. Our illusions create delusions. We draw our own conclusions. Some create their own reality, living in a blind mentality. Like building a wall, but they pay. Climate change is just weather today. That's not the world of the masses. Sorry, that's not the word of the masses, but for the ones kissing asses. Lost is a nice place to find yourself, because it's not in the book on a shelf. Actually, it's inside the brain of those that we label insane. Some people live up to the label. They're not even mentally unstable. To say Black Lives Matter is trouble, it's clear they live in a bubble. They say that sky might just fall, but that's just building a wall, and that Obamacare is a disaster. Let's screw the world a bit faster. North of the borders, the same, is led by a man who's so vain, he's just spending their cash right while he's smoking his stash. There's leaders that rule overseas, and they do whatever they please. Quite often they threaten a war and create a worldwide uproar. Now, leading a country is a chore, not if you can say the word for. If life is a game, then we're all insane, and things will forever remain. Be careful who you put in power. Some can't tell a day from an hour. When it comes to the end of the day, like puppets, we do what they say. So as long as we elect human beings that think they are God, it seems the world will stay just the same, ruled by men with no brain. Listen to the problem with the world today. Oh, sorry, on SoundCloud. I shouldn't have said that last line. End poem. One line ago.
Great read, Aziziana. You know, this had a really tight rhythm and rhyme scheme to it. They kind of bounced along. It gave it an almost a nursery rhyme feel to it, you know. And it goes through, you know, several concerns of the modern age. You know, what are our current problems? You know, we're kind of painting our own pictures of reality and what we see, and, you know, the wall and climate change, and, you know, there's definitely an American perspective on this piece as well, and just, you know, how politics works and the disagreements that we have with each other, and how we're failing to elect political officials that, you know, represent anyone really but themselves, you know, elect human beings that think they are God, it seems, you know. They have a pretty negative perspective on the modern political system and the representation in government in this country, obviously. It sounds like, you know, due to concerns over larger issues as well. You know, and I think that works well from a perspective of, you know, people don't want to hear the truth because they don't want their illusions destroyed. I will admit, you know, the idea of climate change coming along and destroying the entire planet, or at least making it unlivable for people and so many varieties of plants and animals and everything else, that, you know, things are going to change drastically. That's frightening. That's an extremely frightening concept. And there are just so many different ways that you can approach that. You know, and one of them is to stick your head in the sand and be like, it's not happening, it's all lies. You know, that is an approach. I would, you know, maybe not the best approach in my own personal opinion, but I don't want to get too deep into personal politics. You know, but that's kind of what the poem is saying to me, you know, is that not wanting to deal with problems and just pretending that they don't exist is in itself a problem. Because the reality that you're seeing isn't the real reality. So I think this was done in a kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of almost nursery rhyme kind of way that makes it, I don't know, more lighthearted than the material contained in it is. So I think it's a really interesting piece. I think does a good job of directly communicating, you know, an opinion, and not just an opinion, but it, you know, also offers a suggestion of, you know, what it thinks we should be, what the author thinks we should be doing. So I found this piece very interesting and well done. So thank you, Diane. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I did like the rhyme and flow in this and how it did give it almost a sing-song nursery rhyme type quality. And it's always interesting when there's almost this kind of juxtaposition between the topic of a poem, like something as serious as the politics of the United States and the different things that we are currently disagreeing on as I want to say community, but that's not the right word, but as a nation, and how there is a, like you said, that nursery rhyme almost type feel to it. It's got a nice flow. I think it's interesting, and she brings up all these different topics. It's another one that kind of, you know, gives you food for thought. I like, as far as, you know, something like Things You Think, is there's leaders that rule overseas and do whatever they please. Quite often they threaten a war and create a worldwide uproar. And I think for me, part of what that speaks on is, you know, that, you know, for all the flaws we have in our country, we should still be thankful that we are a country of freedom, you know, where you have that freedom of choice, that freedom to be able to, you know, protest. Because there are countries where even what you're allowed to see on the internet is very limited. Of course, I don't like to delve too much into politics on shows, but I do appreciate that she writes about some challenging and difficult subjects and does that, you know, point out that, you know, as a nation, these are the things that we are going through or have been going through. So absolutely an interesting write all the way through and very well done.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, some great observations in there. Yeah, she does go through so many different topics, you know, to consider, you know, like how are you handling it? I think it's a well-composed piece. And what did you think, Faziana?
I think you've both had great comments. And I agree that the flow and the rhyme of it is lighter than the topic itself, but I think that that works nicely because it makes it more palatable. You know, not that the writing itself isn't, but it's just like because it's a heavy subject, having a bit of lightness in the style makes it accessible. It makes it something that we can, you know, absorb it in a pleasant way, even though it's, you know, upsetting topics to a certain degree. It reminds us of disagreements that are happening in the world, and that, you know, the issues of things that we maybe don't want to know. Like the quote says, sometimes people don't want to hear the truth. Like the part about the global warming, like Babbler pointed out, that's something that people deny, I think, partly because it's not a nice truth. It's not something that we want to know about our world, as much as I see disasters all around me lately. That it's something that we want to hide our head in the sand. And I think that this points out that, you know, maybe we shouldn't. And I think it does it in a nice way where it has like again, a playful manner of saying something really serious, which we've seen a couple times tonight, and I really appreciate the talent that it takes to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. It's difficult, too, you know, to communicate things in a lighthearted way that you don't feel are lighthearted, you know, to kind of soften the blow, I think, a little bit, to take some of the edge off, I think. Yeah, but I agree. There's some deep points that have been brushed upon in some of the poems that we've read tonight, which I think is, you know, always good. I love pieces that get me thinking. You know, I like it when the wheels are turning upstairs. So where are we going now?
Can you put up the one by Julie Buck? Because that's to the same prompt. And I'm sorry, I'm trying to restart my internet. I have a really bad connection right now.
Yeah. You can do that. One second. All right. This is Maybe You Laugh, Maybe You Cry. Did you want me to read this one, Faithiana? I don't know if she's still here or if she stepped out for a sec.
I think it's Pam's turn, but
is it?
I'm fine either way. I could be wrong.
Did you want to go ahead and read this one, Pam?
Sure, I can do that. Maybe You Laugh, Maybe You Cry by Julie Buck. Where does death go to die when too alone with your thoughts and with your shameful lack of growth, life hands you irony? And maybe you laugh, maybe you cry, organized by nature, I do both. The question at hand, where went ambition and that giving a shit thing? And like, what's wrong with annihilation? Following paths not created by me always leads me astray, being in control, an illusion, like tripping on acid, the delusions keep me fooled. Wary by instinct, paranoia pelts my way. I've never needed any help in looking too deep. Do you, too, see the horrors I see? If I could erase what I could, would it be what you would? Just let me breathe in falsehoods, whether wrong or right. Otherwise, how would I ever be able to sleep at night or foolishly weep with fright and poem?
Great read, Pam. I really actually enjoy this piece. I see that it says at the top that it's still in progress, but I really like it as it is. I feel really connected to this piece. I feel like a lot of the thoughts that are expressed here are places that I have been in my own mind. I really loved the little couplet, organized by nature, I do both, you know, like, because that's not particularly organized to laugh and cry at the same time, and yet I've definitely been there. You know, I know exactly what that weird mishmash feels like. But the idea that that is the organized and rational way to behave, I find fascinating. I love the juxtaposition there. You know, the question at hand, where went ambition and that give a shit thing? You know, gosh, I feel that sometimes. You know, as someone with bipolar, it's on or off. You know, and I'm either out there killing it, giving it 110% every day, tackling unreal numbers of things in a way that it's hard to describe, or I am laying in bed indefinitely and wondering, you know, what the hell happened. I think that really kind of gets at that a little bit for me. You know, what happened to caring? Like, why don't I care anymore? And then the next couplet, you know, and like, what's wrong with annihilation? Gosh, I've had dark thoughts like that, you know, even just thinking, you know, brushing a little bit on the previous poem of, you know, the concept of global warming and the kind of damage that may be leading our planet into. Okay, so people might die. Oh, is that a problem? You know, like, I don't know. Sometimes I can be really kind of nonchalant and disconnected from the humanity of things and look at things in it with, like, cold rationality. that isn't so much putting a moral stamp on it as looking at it in like this framing of absolutism, which I feel like is touched on in that. I've certainly had that thought, you know, like what makes it so bad? And not everyone wants to go there, because then you got to talk about like morality and, you know, what is wrong and right and ethics, and it just really delves into a can of worms there for sure. But, I mean, I've certainly had that thought. And then even the next couplet, you know, following paths not created by me always leads me astray. You know, trying to follow someone else's thoughts, someone else's plan, someone else's direction, you know, is never going to be the right way to go for you, because you're you, not the other person. Just in such a brief little statement there, I think that captures a lot as well. I really could go through like every line on this thing. I really kind of connect to this one very strongly. I did also like, I've never needed any help in looking too deep. The horrors that I see, if I could erase what I could it be what you would, you know? You know, do you see the horrible things that I see happening? Do you have the dark and strange and grotesque, intrusive thoughts? I'm talking about me here, not the poem, that I get. You know, like, how relatable is my experience, or am I the weirdo? And there's this weird taboo where, you know, you can't talk about some of these things. You can't express some of these darker thoughts because they're so just kind of off limits. And there's this weird fear of, like, the light that you'll be cast in. You know, the judgment that comes along with that once you pull the cat out of the bag and you can't put it back in, you know, it's a rough thing, you know. And then, but there's also like this sense of really wanting to be connected with other people. Like, do you feel this way? Like, does anyone else feel this way? Do they think this way? You know, and then just the, So let me believe in lies then. You know, if the world is that dark and if it is that twisted and if I'm not wrong, then I'd rather not know it so that I can at least carry on feeling fulfilled and happy and like things mean things. At least that's what it says to me. Which almost makes me think of like Matrix and the guy who, you know, is eating the steak in the restaurant and he just wants to go back. Like, he wants to essentially like regurgitate the red pill. Because you just miss that sense of satisfaction and fulfillment. Even if it's a lie, you'd rather have the lie than the reality. So, I don't know, I really enjoyed this. I thought there was a lot packed into this little poem that's just made up of, you know, anything between single lines to triplets. And in some ways it's just disjointed, but in other ways very connected. So I liked this a lot. I thought this was an excellent piece. I think it touches a lot of thoughts and feelings that I've had. I find it incredibly relatable. So thank you so much, Julie, for the entry. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I really liked this, too. I like that she has starts with the question, where does death go to die? And then, you know, like, I like that you mentioned the word disjointed. Like, it almost feels disjointed, and yet there's a lot of connection and a lot of things to think about. And life hands you irony, and maybe you laugh, maybe you cry. Organized by nature, I do both. I like that phrase, that organized by nature, I do both. Like, it's part of the human experience to both laugh and cry. Being in control of an illusion, like tripping on acid, the delusions keep me fooled. You know, I like, to me, I also like the, well, it's great all the way through, but I like where it says, do you too see the horrors I see, and how would I ever be able to sleep at night, foolishly weep with fright? You know, and to me, there's almost this sense of when somebody goes through trauma, especially in childhood, and the memory shuts down. Like the trauma for some people, trauma is not remembered or it's not, it's put into the back of the memory, almost like as a form of protection. So I thought about that, and I thought about, you know, how oftentimes we just have those moments where we can't face things. We don't want to face things because it's not time. I think part of the growing and healing process is the mind's ability to know when it is time to face something and when it is time to retreat. I think it's a wonderful thought-provoking write and very well done.
Excellent point. Yeah, I like that concept of knowing when it's time to deal with things. You know, wallowing for a moment, not because the wallowing is wrong, because that giving yourself that moment of processing and contemplation and figuring out what's happening. And then you do just kind of get to that point where it's time to act, you know, time to change, time to move on, whatever the next step may be. There is a weird internalization process that happens there. You're absolutely right. Great point. Great observation. What did you think, Faziana?
Well, first I'm going to respond to what Pam just said. And I think that that is something that's really important is knowing when to allow yourself to think about some things, and that there are times where escapism is the thing, and there are times where dealing with it is the thing. This poem actually really made me think about that. I had this one therapist who made me visualize a genie bottle, and which seemed a little silly at first, but it was like whenever something comes up that it's like too upsetting and you're not going to be able to focus in that moment, you picture the bottle and you like put that little problem in the bottle and you like visualize it in some way. And then later when you have time to have a little breakdown because you're not like, you know, in public or at work or something, then you can open up that bottle and deal with whatever it is. But you have to put it in the bottle for now. And I was thinking about that as I read this. I really liked the way that she worded things in such a straightforward kind of way. The question of, at hand, where went ambition, and that give a shit thing. The way that she said that is just, it's so direct and conversational, that give a shit thing. And, you know, sometimes there are no shits given. And it just feels very real, the way that she worded that. And as for the part that says, and like, what's wrong with annihilation, I really related to that and to what you said about it, Babbler. My husband and I were talking the other day where we kind of like sort of understood Thanos in the Marvel Universe, where he's like, if we just like, you know, reduced the population so it would help the environment, it would help with wars, it would be so much if we weren't like super overpopulated. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's a very evil thought, but at the same time, I'm like, maybe all the crap that's going wrong is nature's way of being like, let's reset. So I've definitely had, you know, dark thoughts that I'm not necessarily proud of, and I think that everyone does to a certain extent. Maybe not as quite to the level that I do, but like you said, Babbler, there are things that we don't discuss with people because we're not sure if you know, it's a weird thing that only we think. But I'm finding with my poetry, because I don't use my real name and like all that, I tend to be more blunt than I am in real life, like even here on the show, because it's like my safe place of being someone else. And so I can say all of those dark things, and it seems to be that's the moments where people relate. My poems where I'm like, I don't know if I should publish that, that's the ones that people respond to. So I think everyone does have that secret lair that they don't admit. But then poems like this let you see that someone else does too, and connect. And I think that's one of the cool things about poetry is it's sort of a safe space to get out that darkness. And I really liked the way that she put, just let me breathe in falsehoods, breathing it in, you know, inhaling that fictional world, that the happy little white lies sometimes are what get you through. you know, cheesy movies that I would have made fun of years ago. If I'm having a panic attack, I can watch that and calm down. And so sometimes we have to allow ourselves those falsehoods to a certain extent. And I like the ending, how would I ever be able to sleep at night or foolishly weep with fright? It's so real. This felt very raw and honest, and I love it for that.
Yeah, it did feel very honest. You know, it did, and it felt kind of just bold enough, you know, where you're like, oh, are you also thinking these things that I think, you know, without really getting into the nitty-gritty of it, because those are, you know, like I said, kind of odd things. Yeah, no, I really liked this piece. It felt very human, and it felt confessional without being oversharing. So
yeah.
I think this was very well done. I liked it. Yeah, excellent piece. Where are we off to next?
Next, I'm going to do mine, which is to prompt 10. And prompt 10 is, I am a forest and a night of dark trees, but he who is not afraid of my darkness will find banks full of roses under my cypresses. Under My Cypresses by Faziana. A storm in fire season, raising the hair on your arms, wisps of ebony smoke blown wild around the sunset of my face, thundercloud pupils with lightning-streaked irises, my gaze from a distance foreshadows disaster. If you can brave the hurricane of my moods, step boldly into my fire whirl, licked by the forked tongue of blue and gold, the eye of the storm will be worth the risk. Onyx, Odyssey, Helleboros, angel food cake framed by midnight petals, Molly Sanderson, Viola, radiant center, purple framed amidst velvet shadow. Your troubles will not dare follow you. Shelter in my foreboding palace. Zandishia, black star, only experienced by the rare soul who can see past the towering trees of my trauma. End poem. And I can't even say my own words. It's the name of a flower. That's super fancy.
The super fancy flower.
A super fancy flower.
But fancier than saying that. But great read. I think this is a really dead-on take of this prompt, you know. It's kind of, I don't want this to sound as negative as I think it's going to sound, because I don't intend it that way, so I'm going to clarify that. But it's, you know, everybody has baggage, you know, everybody has negative aspects of their character. I don't know anyone that I'm just like, wow, you are absolutely perfect. No, those people don't exist, and honestly, I'm so in disbelief of their existence that I would find that itself a flaw. Their perfection would be absolutely off-putting. And the real person is under there, like the parts to appreciate, the parts to love. You know, the one thing about it is I think there's something, too, to be said for loving the damage itself, you know, not just working your way through it or finding your way beneath it, but also to fall in love with the flaws, I think is, you know, important as well. I love some of the language that's used to describe the darker aspects of personality. And, you know, I don't want to directly say you, because I understand that sometimes poems are written from a narrative perspective and not so much perspective. But
it's me.
I just don't like presumptuous. I know that I write pieces. My pieces are personal and are confessional because, you know, I mostly write to help me deal with, like, emotional things and work my way through my own thoughts. But occasionally I write one that's not about myself. And then it's always weird because we get like, oh, you this and you that. And I'm like, you are overreading. But anyway, so I just don't like to assume. But I really love some of the descriptions in here are just really rich and beautiful, and it feels like you're walking through, like, a dark garden, you know, like this kind of midnight fantasy, you know. Onyx Odyssey Helleborus, angel food cake framed by midnight petals. Molly Sanderson Viola, radiant center, purple framed amidst velvet shadow. You know, just these dark, dark flowers, and just paints like this picture of like this midnight garden that's just bedecked in like rich greens and purples and blues, and it, you know, just I don't know, it's kind of a feast for my imagination visually here, just because of all of the different descriptions. You know, the hurricane of my moods, step boldly into my fire world. You know, it's like stepping into this raging storm and finding this dark and beautiful garden, and like that is the center of yourself. I thought it was very visually stimulating. I think it's a wonderful piece of Asiana. What did you think, Pam?
I really like this. Unfortunately, I didn't catch the entire read, but I've read through it. A funny thing is, I just wrote a poem a few days ago that used the word the Helleborus. So I thought that was kind of cool that we both used the same word. I like how you use the nature imagery, the idea of the imagery of the storm, and even the Helleborus plant itself. Which, if I remember right, is a poisonous plant. I know it's represents, well, from research from my own poem, the goddess Minerva. Yes, goddess Minerva. And then your troubles will not dare follow you, shelter in my foreboding palace. I really like that. And then who can only experience by the rare soul who can see past the towering trees of my trauma. I like the whole idea of the towering trees, the cypresses representing the trauma. And then in order to see that the beauty of the star, you know, to see the beauty within the forest, you have to be willing to walk into there. You know, you need to go to where the light isn't. To see, to experience the beauty of a soul that's rare. And it's just absolutely a wonderful write all the way through, and very well done.
Thank you, both of you.
Mm-hmm. Lovely piece. Is there anything you wanted to add? I know it's a little weird to comment
no.
on your own piece.
Just that I had fun looking up flowers. I looked up goth gardens and, like, black flowers, and there are so many beautiful black flowers that I now actually really want to have, like, a gothic garden, like, just all the blacks and the really dark purples and the very dark reds, and I don't know, I found some really cool flowers that now I'm like, I wonder if I could grow these. It started off as a metaphor, but it has now, like, got into me having a gothic garden.
Why not? Gothic gardens are cool. I've seen some really cool ones, actually, kind of popping up recently, you know, of gardens that are done in all black and stuff. They're pretty interesting looking, so. Yeah.
I believe we have a SoundCloud for Gerald Green.
Yes, we do.
Yay.
Summer Theater in Maine, written and read by Gerald Green. Epigraph. And those who were seen dancing were thought to be insane by those who could not hear the music. Friedrich Nietzsche. The new sign in front of the old church advertised the performance about to begin. Doors that once promised hope and damnation now invited pleasure. Actors, serving as docents, led us to our seats in the large room, where all plaster and insulation had been removed. Everything was bare, stripped of religious trapping, excepting the stage floor painted a dark brown enamel. An eclectic collection of chairs sat where pews once stood, with little doors on each end, every other row restricted with string, a reminder that COVID-19 might be present. I looked at the ceiling, searching for old prayers from hypocrites that might be rejected or stuck, never reaching heaven, or shadows of demons in the dim light. As the play began with a short monologue, I wondered how different it was compared to the inaugural Puritan sermon heard in this room in a previous century. What was it about those farmers, sailors, and fishermen that stood together and redefined government by and for the people, a concept never before attempted on such a scale? End poem.
Wonderful SoundCloud. Thank you, Gerald, for sending that in. I enjoyed this perspective. You know, it's almost like a short story in a way, you know, walking you through this re-experiencing of a church that is no longer a church, but is now a theater, and how the world has been impacted, you know, by recent events, and just the experience of sitting in this place that used to be a church that you used to know as a church that is not anymore, watching a reenactment of a historical event, and just wondering, you know, how many times has the world changed over? You know, how many things have changed? How many pages have turned? You know, and to sit there and consider, you know, the forefathers of the United States and, like, you know, the fact that they were farmers and sailors and fishermen. You know, these weren't politicians. They were, you know, just people, and how they contemplated change and whether that's, you know, what kind of parallel is happening modern, in a modern way. Yeah, it's just very interesting, and it feels very introspective, and it, I love how it internalizes the emotion. You know, nowhere in here does it really tell you how to feel, and yet there is this interesting kind of melancholic nostalgia that's kind of wrapped up into it, you know, like this weird feeling of things have changed, you know, and you can't go back entirely to how they were before. I think there's always going to be the scar of this momentous event as kind of proofed in the pudding here, that you're now sitting in a theater watching the marks left by a previous major world-changing event. So I thought this was a really interesting piece, and I thought it was very emotionally effective. So thank you, Gerald, for the wonderful write. I enjoyed this piece quite a bit. What did you think, Faziana?
I really liked the part where it says, every other row restricted with string, a reminder that COVID-19 might also be present. When I read that, I was picturing almost like a ghostly kind of figure sitting at all the empty spots, and that, like, representing the illness that might be there. And it's true that it's a reminder when we see these things. And I personally feel reassured when there's stuff like, when it has things separated like that, because I'm like, they're taking precautions. But at the same time, seeing it kind of triggers us into thinking about that there is something wrong. It kind of reminds me of, like, when I was bald because of my illness. I don't really care about my appearance. I'm really not very into looks and hair and stuff. Like, I haven't cut my hair in, like, forever. But when I was bald, I hated it, because when I looked in the mirror, I was like, I'm sick. That was, like, the first thing I thought. When I looked in the mirror, I knew I'm sick. And I feel like that's the same thing here, where it's not so much that it's ugly having that little restricting string. It's, you see this part cut off, and you're like, there's danger. It sinks in. I don't know, that really struck me there. I also liked the part where he's looking up at the ceiling, searching for the old prayers like maybe they got rejected or stuck trying to get up to heaven. That I don't know, there's something very sweet and innocent about that. It's like almost like childlike imagining that these prayers, and so now I'm a very visual person. I'm picturing that as the people make their prayers, like a little balloon that floats up, and it's supposed to be like ghostly and go right through the ceiling, but some of them get stuck there because they're a little bit too real. And I don't know, it created some really interesting images in my mind, and I love when a poem does that.
Yeah, it does kind of paint an interesting picture. I like what you said about the ghosts in the kind of in the pews that are now theater seats, you know. I don't know, because it's almost like the ghost of an event is, you know, an interesting concept. Excellent comments, Afisiana. What did you think, Pam?
I really like this. I had to Google. I was pretty sure, but I wanted to make sure this was an actual place. And like all places during 2020 and part of 2021, it was affected by COVID, as they couldn't put on shows. What I find intriguing about this is it delves into history, the whole idea of what once was and what it has become. And as was mentioned, the kind of the similarities, you know, the how. Or not the differences, like how it became something different. Like everything was there, stripped of religious trappings, excepting the stage floor painted a dark brown enamel. And then I also really like, the play began with a short monologue, I wondered how different it was compared to the inaugural Puritan sermon. And what's interesting to me about that part is it kind of has this message of the more things change, the more they stay the same. Because on one hand, before it was a church where you were told specifically what God you should worship and how you should worship him. And yet there's such a sense of hero worship for famous people, especially people in the acting business, that you can't help but think maybe it's just one form of church, one form of worship, of being told how to think and who to think is important, replaced with another. It's an intriguing write all the way through, beautifully written, and as always, a wonderful SoundCloud. Very well done.
I like the point that you make there about the more things change, the more they stay the same, you know, and exactly that, like, weird parallel existence, you know, that kind of gets poked at here. You know, like, how many changes over is it going to have? And yet, that is the status quo, you know, which kind of almost it pokes at, you know, another one of the prompts.
But, yeah, I found this piece very interesting. I enjoyed it very much. He was contemplative in a kind of heavy way. I don't know. I thought it was an excellent piece. Where are we off to next?
I think it's your turn to read Babbler, and we have one by Peter Solway.
All righty. This is A Day Out with Friedrich. Convince his sister of soup and napkin. Bit of winter sun, more nutrition, revive memories of Switzerland, avalanches of angled mountains, calm, deep with blue fish, disability design. Wheel him through herds of kids, teacher blonde and handsome, Gestapo to come, gaunt Friedrich mumbling, Jesus of wants wine. See the Rhine maidens dancing, loosen garments one by one, river bathing as if the Seine. Come on, life on my sister's lounge, oh, pushing one. More boring than a deaf Beethoven, list of idiots, cures for warts, relief from thought, filling his touring pram. Sick memories of childhood again, dependent on idiots of relatives, invalid Friedrich taking a fit, jagged as the Italian Alps. Snow coming down, this reporter swiftly pushing him home, way too fast for him, leaving Turin or his mustached sister's liking. End poem. Well, this was an interesting piece. I've always find Peter's way of writing so intriguing. But this, you know, to me is about kind of walking Friedrich through, you know, obviously Friedrich being Nietzsche, you know, kind of pushing him around and walking him around through some of the things that he philosophized on, you know, especially in terms of like the Übermensch and like master race and that kind of idea, you know, looking particularly at Nazi era Germany here, you know, just to be on a pleasant stroll with a little pram with little baby Friedrich in it, wading through crowds of, you know, Nazis and dancing women, you know, acting like it's a utopia almost, you know, with some things injected in here that are like more boring than a deaf Beethoven. Well, that's not boring at all. You know, like that, like this, you know, list of idiots and the cure for warts, you know, just all of these things that are like, oh, that's the bad stuff and this is the good stuff, without that really being the case, you know, just looking at things in a very black and white manner. So I thought that was interesting, you know, and considering Friedrich, Jesus of cheap trick, you know, Dionysus wants wine, you know, a god saying, give me what I'm due, essentially. You know, I think it really kind of points a finger at, you know, the aspects particularly that he would be in disagreement with that I find interesting. So, as always, there's a lot to digest here and kind of piece together. I feel like in many ways, Peter's poems are kind of mind puzzles that are really interesting to kind of click around, almost like a Rubik's Cube, and then you have all these little aha moments, you know, as you read it over and over again. It gets really fascinating. Just, you know, kind of take it stanza by stanza and piece it together. It always takes me a minute to get really where I want to go. But my overall gist that I get from this is, yeah, just the kind of, not quite tongue-in-cheek, but almost in a biting way, looking at the flawed thinking of Nietzsche from the perspective of actually being with him on the town in different stages of his life, and just kind of examining some of the more ugly philosophies that he came up with. So, always an excellent write. Always found it, you know, his pieces interesting to get things kind of going mentally. So, wonderful write. What did you think of Feziana?
I think it's really interesting. Like you, I usually have to read Peter's pieces several times to click everything together. With this one, as it was being read, I pictured it like if I was working in a nursing home where Nietzsche was an elderly man who was maybe a little senile, like possibly Alzheimer's, where he was confused about what time of his life he was in, and taking him out in his wheelchair and everything that's going on kind of reminds him of different bits, and he kind of spews out his philosophies on things out of context. And I don't know, I had this vivid image of taking him out to show him things and hearing about stuff from other times and his thoughts on things. That just came to life for me in this poem, and I'm very intrigued by it, but I definitely have to read it a few times to make sure I'm catching all of his references.
Yeah, I agree with your take on it, Feziana. It does feel almost like, you know, walking through town with your racist old uncle, you know, and just kind of biting your tongue a little bit at the flawed thinking, you know, or the, not even flawed, but just like taboo or stuff you're not supposed to say, you know, like opinions that have become socially unacceptable thanks to strides in accepting more people. I don't know how to phrase that. So excellent point. Yeah, no, I do like that as a context. I was thinking more like an infant, but feeble, you know, old codger is kind of an interesting direction as well. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I like both those perspectives, the feeble codger, the infant, and I both think they both work real well. I'm wondering, though, if it doesn't have in part to do with the fact that Nietzsche had a mental breakdown and spent his last few years being taken care of by his mother. And so maybe it's kind of a representation of that and a representation of both, because, you know, you're an adult, but you lose your ability to think and to take care of yourself. And your mother takes care of your last few years, it's almost as if you are living this horrific idea, horrible idea of a second childhood. I do like how this is, as you described, biting with tongue-in-cheek, with the Gaunt Friedrich mumbling Jesus of cheap trick, Dionysus once wine. You know, Nietzsche being famous for the phrase, God is dead. It's almost this whole idea of somebody who wasn't a religious philosopher being at the end of their life saying, you know, prove yourself. I am Dionysus, and I want you, this old, you know, to give me the wine that you say you can make. I did like more boring than a deaf Beethoven list of idiots, cures for wards, relief from thoughts, filling his touring pram. And the pram does fit well because, you know, with being, you know, with the whole idea of it being a baby. But it's interesting that he put the word touring along with it, as if it's taken beyond just the neighborhood. I mean, that's what I think. Let's see. And sick memories of childhood, again, dependent on idiots of relatives. And, you know, just there really, to me, seems to be this whole idea of the emotional and mental downfall of Nietzsche, and with his downfall. And the interesting thing about when he had his downfall is, can you imagine if he had lived longer and kept his ability to think, how much more he could have offered up of value to the world of philosophy as far as literature goes. It's really a wonderful write all the way through. And as always, yeah, it's almost like figuring out a Rubik's Cube. I wanted to mention when Jeremy says in Late Night Poets, this dances along a taboo tightrope. That is so true. Just wanted to read that because I think that's a very apt phrase for so much of Peter's poetry. And just an excellent write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, excellent comment, Pam. And thanks for the just referring to, you know, his mental state at the time of his death, you know. It does add quite a bit of context for this piece. I think it might be like just a trifecta of like all stages, you know, interestingly swept together. Because I think they all work just really well in different ways. And I feel like the phrasing kind of teases out that it's intentional. It's just a fascinating write, and there's a lot being said in here, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great piece. Where are we off to next, Evasiana?
We have one by Mark Loopy. And Pam, I think it's your turn to read, if you're willing.
Well, it says we have a recording from Mark for this show. Does he have more than one poem?
He does. I think our recording is for his other one. Does it say a title for it?
No, it just says PSPS Loopy 81.
Okay, no, that's his other one.
Okay, no problem. Just checking. Oh, and it's my turn to read. I suppose I shouldn't put myself on mute then. That would not make much sense. All right. Here we go. Journey's End at the End by Mark Loopy. And it goes like this. The prophet said, life's fabric is unstable. There's only one thing we should really want. Union of single loves around a table. Beneath the moonlight falling at a slant. Through the enshrouding canopy of leaves, companions of the story all around, everyone drinks and talks and thinks and grieves for things they left behind or never found. We loved each other, probably won't see each other when we leave this company, this remnant crowd of travelers who came, endured the journey to the mystic flame. The prophet said, relax, just understand. The ending and beginning are at hand. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I enjoyed this piece quite a bit. Just the idea, you know, of all of these people meeting up together at the end and or beginning of life. You know, this takes a very cyclical perspective on it. You know, and to talk about their lives, basically, and all of the different thoughts that they had and the places they went and grieving for things that you lost and that you never had. You know, I particularly liked that line. There was something really nice about the mouthfeel of it, but also just the concept of it, you know, companions of the story all around. Everyone drinks and talks and thinks and grieves for things they left behind or never found. It rolls so nicely off the tongue, and it just feels, I don't know, it feels like a complete idea. I particularly was entranced by that phrase. You know, and just, I don't know, there's this camaraderie happening in this piece. You know, at the end of life, and just knowing that, you know, that's where the magic is, I think, is, you know, with each other and in sharing and in journeying together. This feels has a strong piece of camaraderie to me. That's kind of how I took it. I found it very relatable, and it almost feels like a Tolkien scene in a way to me. The picture that I get of the journey's end at the inn, you know, all the different characters of life meeting up together and discussing all of the things that they've seen and the places they've been and the lives they've lived. I don't know, there's something very comforting in the imagery of it to me. So I thought this was a wonderful write. And it felt almost magical and high fantasy to me. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree on the mystical and high fantasy, especially with the journey to the mystic flame. If that sounds like either some big important journey or going to some medieval pub named the Mystic Flame. I thought it was wonderfully clever and fun the way he used want and slant in the first stanza, because of the fact that that is a slant rhyme. You know, I don't know. I just thought that was cool. And, you know, I really particularly liked the way the second stanza flowed and the imagery in it. But also that behind the kind of almost fun imagery of the enshrouding canopy of leaves, you know, the stories, the drinks, the talking, there's a serious undertone too. You know, there's the thinking and the grieving for things they left behind or never found. I think oftentimes we grieve just as much those things that never came to fruition that we do things that we chose to leave behind. So, you know, it's, you know, wonderful. You know, it is fun to read. Got great imagery. It does have that whole, like, almost Tolkien feel, like you said. But at the same time, it really makes us think about all those things as we're taking that journey in life that we regret. So just an excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, I don't know, there's something just, yeah, really pleasant. It flows so nicely. It's almost cradling in a way. Excellent comments, Pam. And what did you think, Faziana?
I agree with both of you. I loved the line for things they left behind and never found, especially the never found part, because there's something about grieving for something that was an idea of what you thought you were going to have that sometimes somehow even hurts more than something you had and you lost. Grieving the missed opportunity can be really painful, and I thought that was beautifully expressed. And now I really want to have two pubs, one called The Journey's End and one called Mystic Flame, and you do a pub crawl throughout this, like, old-timey old city, and you start off at Mystic Flame and you end at Journey's End, and we're going to have a party. I think Mark has inspired a new business venture for us. Pam, it will go with our bakery strip club, and
we're going to have to buy an entire mini mall just to have all our businesses that we have planned.
A whole village, really.
Malls aren't doing so well these days, so it might be the perfect
time. They really aren't. There you go.
Is it bad that I kind of mourn the loss of mall culture, though? Like, there was something about there being an outing that wasn't, like, food-centric. You know, that was like a place to go that's not your house. I don't know.
Right?
I miss it.
And plus the nostalgia of it. Like, exactly. Like being a teenager, walking around the mall, stalking
going
boys, arcade, all that kind of stuff.
Shopping for stupid things. You know, yeah. And it's just not. Ordering stuff offline is not the same experience, okay? It's just not. So,
it really isn't.
I miss it. I miss mall culture. I do. I think it's a thing. And there's something, too, about going to the mall and trying clothes on. You end up buying things that you wouldn't have bought online. You know, I don't know. In some ways, I mourn that loss of mall culture. Weird side. Where are we off to next?
Let's do yours.
Oh, okay. I technically wrote this for a different contest, but it's still very applicable, especially to the prompt six, you know, about changing. So this is drugs and other musings. At 9, I wondered what magnetism drew people to glass pipes and nights cleaning immaculate kitchens, running on 2 hours of sleep caught in the net from last Thursday, when every trailer park dealer wore the same set of crusty scrabs, black fingernails, and a French fry smile. At 15, I understood the meaning of addiction. They were suckling on the resinous teats of Algea to feed inner demons that had grown so large there was no longer distinction between the two. Once upon a time, that dilapidated dealer had been a clean-cut chap in a wool suit. At 25, it clicked. The dealer had never been on the up-and-up. He'd only ever played the part, and little baggies of white powder were how he stayed connected to the wolf beneath the merino, peeling back the plastic wrappers just enough to expose the popsicle reality. At 30, I see black snakes on tinfoil, dollar store rose holders, aren't any different than the salty beef patties I throw back far too often. Everyone is trying to fill the void, peeking its nasty head out from behind the curling edges of an Uncle Sam poster. Fast food, hard drugs, 4 a.m. 5-mile jogs, They're all squeezing the last bit out of a broken serotonin machine. Some just kill faster. Ask me my thoughts when I'm 40, if I'm still kicking around. End quote.
Wow, that is fantastic. I really, really love this, and it's so funny because the disabilities group where I do a lot of collaborations is doing one that is like basically this poem fits it so perfectly. It's about chasing your demons and how that ends up being like I'm just the whole time I was like, wow, this is like she wrote it to our prom. So I don't know. I might have to rope you into that collaboration. This is wonderful. I like how you go through the different stages, 9, 15, 25, 30, and then speculating about 40, because those are key ages. I really liked the feed the inner demons that have grown so large. And I love when you make the connection that the food that you're eating is trying to fill the void just like the drugs. And no matter what your addiction is, it's all about trying to fill a void that it can't really fill. And I don't know, I thought this was very well done. It was very intelligent about like the reasoning behind things, and I loved how your perspective evolved as you aged. I love that. Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. I have to read this as intelligent writing. I remember reading this before, and it works well with both prompts. And I do like how you go through the ages and in different times of your life where you learn from observing the mistakes that other people make. And I find it particularly interesting where you mentioned the whole idea that the drug dealer used to be somebody in the up and up, and then you look back and you realize they'd never been on the up and up. He'd only ever played the part. You know, oftentimes people are very good at playing parts. But particularly like near the end with that realization that we all have our addictions. Well, we all have that we're all squeezing the last bit out of a broken serotonin machine. Some just kill faster. You know, we all go through troubles in life, and we all have those ways that we want to try to just, you know, make a little moment of happiness for ourselves. Great ending, powerful ending line, actually. Ask me my thoughts when I'm 40, if I'm still kicking around. And there's kind of, I like the humor in that, the whole humor of, you know, if these greasy burger patties haven't killed me by the time I'm 40, ask me again. And very cool, excellent, strong write all the way through, and very well done.
Thank you. Appreciate them.
So I want to try to squeeze in Mark's other poem, which was for last week, and it got carried over. Pam, can you play the audio?
Absolutely.
This is a comic poem. It's the perspective presented. It is actually the complete opposite of the one I really have. You. I know I shouldn't interfere. It's just, you really shouldn't be here. You're just a drag when you are here. You're on the fringe and should stay there. You say you're lovable, you are. But actually, you're peculiar. Your identity I can't infer from that stupid t-shirt that you wear. Apathy, as its allure. So tell me who you think you are. You say you're not too sure. Then tell me what you probably were and why. Exactly, I should care. Unfair, I'm not aware. fair is really there. Still you claim that you are here and that what I'm saying wears you out.
Great write. Excellent read, too, from Mark. You know, we don't really have time to comment, but I would like to recommend that everyone go leave him a written comment so that he can get some feedback. But we're at the end of our show.
That's right. So thank you, Pam. Thank you, Babbler. Thank you, Phil. And thank you, everyone who wrote for the contest. I hope that you will check out my contest for next week. We have one already there, and there's a contest every week. We alternate between me and Babbler, so check out our web, our profiles on allpoetry.com, and we hope to hear from you next time. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thanks, everybody.